Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now if you're lonely. Join me now if you're free. Join me now if you're able. Join me now, me. I'm sorry. Ah, so close. Sometimes we make mistakes, but it's great to make them together. When I was a child, I bowled as a child. I wore the cologne of a child. But when I grew up, I put away childish bowling cologne. Another thing I did as a child is I played these games that involved eventually going into some kind of hut or fort or a tent or a cave. And the themes of the games were usually about being chased or something. You were on the run. You're playing war. You're trying to survive. Or you had a tribe or something like that out in the woods. We're being chased by the Gamlocks or something. I don't know, some TV show villain at the time. That isn't on. It doesn't matter. But we used our imagination when we stole from TV shows. But we'd end up in some kind of little hut or something. We'd all gather around and we'd go, wow, we're safe for now. And that's the way we felt. We felt protected in our little caves, our little hidey holes. We were safe for now because when you're a child, see, everything is an unknown threat. Everything is crazy. You have no control. You live in a world that is unknown. And so all you really have are those moments of feeling, I am safe for now, and that's enough. When you get older, you see, you can't summon that as quickly because you have to control things that happen in the future. So when they become out of your control and things become more unknown, it's difficult to run to that hidey hole, to run to that blanket fort and say, I am safe for now, and that's all I can get is this for now, a little bit of safety. Oh, my goodness. I love being in this radio fort with you, and that's what it is. It's put together not with sheets, not with your mom's good sheets with a very high thread count. First of all, she'd kill you if you knew that you were using them and that you had cut little holes in them to peek out of. We might as well just, let's run away. Let's take the sheets, though, and use as a tent. But let's go now because your mother's going to be so angry with us. But it's so fun under here with our pillows. It doesn't look like a camping tent. It looks like the tent of some sultan or something. You know in those TV shows where the sultan is in a tent in the desert, but you go inside and it's mostly velvet and pillows and satin and a camel's nose and the sculpture of a camel's nose and all sorts of people wearing that kind of see-through fabric and everything. Woo! And gold and a lamp. What kind of lamp? It's a genie lamp. It's the kind that if you rub, you get sucked into some sort of Sherwood Schwartz sitcom. No, it's more menacing than that. It's a real genie or gin or bathtub gin or slow gin, they would call it. Back home, the slow gin. Can I get a wish?
Maybe.
That's it. He wasn't very popular, but they've named a drink after him. Oh, they've named a drink after lots of things, too. Let's name one after us. The folks that come together and hide in their little pillow fort. I might have said sheet fort, but for that's a hard one to say and not mess up, so don't say that. Let's say pillow fort, even though the pillows are just on the inside. That's like naming something terrazzo fort. The terrazzo is the flooring. The fort is made of, I don't know, big limestone blocks. That's not a good name for it. Fort Limestone. I believe there's one in Florida. It's usually named after some gruff-looking old European. I'm here to kill people I don't understand. Let's name a fort after you. Except that the fort isn't protecting the right people. It should protect the victims. But it's always protecting the bully. And if you go back and look, no, not necessarily. I don't know anything. Maybe, I don't know. I think all good people had castles. And everybody around, they're like the Morlocks. That's probably not how it was. I don't know how it was because I was not there. So this, you say, well, read some books. Touché. I shall do this. And then I will know more about what has happened. But I think the world will still feel unknown to me largely because of the limits of my senses and mostly the limits of my brain. Oh, it's a good one. I'm not complaining. I have a fine brain. It's like if you get a free car and say, I just can't stand this car. Hey, is it run? Yeah. Then fine, you're good. Don't complain about it. It's probably okay. But it gives me pain and agony and internal suffering. Again, a car is a mixed thing, right? I mean, it gets you around, but gosh, you're right. A car, and look what they're doing to the environment and everything, our brains. It's the exhaust, I think. It's the byproduct of thought and driving around and having to get someplace. Ooh, there's a price to pay. But we can always escape, you and I. Oh, I hate to admit that we're naturally fearful creatures. But if we were not, would we have survived this long if we didn't scatter away? Skitter, scatter is one of them. What do mice do? They skitter, they shuffle. Maybe if they're dancing, they could be dancing around. I don't know what kind of mice you got. But they have all sorts of options as far as movement. But one of them is going away, scuttering away. It's scuttering, I think, away really quickly. And then going into some sort of hole in the wall, usually one at floor level. Sometimes they'll catapult themselves up and land in a hole that's mid-wall. You don't see that much anymore with mice. A lot of today's mice are so lazy. But they used to, a mouse would get a good run, like being chased by a cat, and then, poof, he'd take flight and jump up, and his mouse hole would be, I don't know, 6 feet, eye level. They used to be eye level, I think, and boom, catapult himself right in there. Cat can't quite jump that high. And so he gets in there, and the mouse turns around, and he says, you know, for now, I'm safe for now, but I know the fate of all mice is to be eaten by a single cat, who will then be so engorged and horrible it'll explode, and some of the mice will have lived, and they'll come scattering out of his belly, and they'll be reunited with their family. Oh, I thought you were lost. No, I was simply in the belly of the glutton cat. Oh, we can all be reunited now. I'm glad we're together. Let's go to an island, you and I. Let's pretend that my house is an island. Hello, friends. I am speaking to you today from a desert island. It's not a desert, actually. There are a lot of trees and beaches. In fact, there's a beach that goes all the way around like a ring road. And there's a lagoon and a small mountain with a cave system in which we've built a wine bar. That sounds pretentious. It's more like a grotto cafe where you can sip the local coconut juice and watch the water slowly drip from the stalactites. I'll get to that later. It's called the Naked Gnome, by the way, because one of the stalagmites looks like a naked gnome. Oh, hey, it's Lou. Lou Register, everybody.
Hello, friends. I'm pretending to walk through a doorway, but really, it's two small royal palms.
Hey, you really know your palm species.
I worked as a palm tree inspector in Jacksonville, but my territory went all the way to Deerfield. Broward County has its own palm tree inspector.
You're making this up, right?
I am! When the conditions are right, lying is more entertaining than harmful.
True.
So, I brought you a little something.
What is it? I know what it looks like, but I'm sure there's an imaginative embellishment.
Nah, it's just a box. Thought you might could use it to keep your palm tree fiber socks in.
Yeah, I made these palm tree fiber socks, and they're not very practical.
But they're a work of art.
Well, thank you.
You can keep anything in it. It's just a box.
Is it, though?
Oh, okay, you got me. Actually, it's a discreet and inconsequential memory-viewing immersive device. A dimvid.
A dimvid.
Yep. You can see and experience things from the past that weren't important and are completely out of context. Not all memories are precious. Some are like used Kleenex, disposable. But just because something is disposable doesn't mean you can't get one more use out of it. Just won't be a good use.
So, what memory is in this one?
It might be us coming to the island.
Oh, shall we open it up and see? Would you like to come with us, friend?
Of course they would. What else is there to do?
All right, well, let's open her up, Lou.
Here we go.
Where are we?
The time door
nowhere
is not
yet.
Used for anything until this
is resolved.
This is a sort of hallway. We'll be there in a second.
You are here. You are there. Both at the same time.
We're just falling through time. Well, not really.
I remember this. This is a few days after we first arrived on the island.
Let's watch and see what happens.
Well, we know what happens. We were there.
Yeah, but then we were worried about the future. Now that we know it turns out terrible, we can just enjoy the moment.
You're scaring me with that ladder. Do you really have to climb up there?
There's no other way to install the coconut light fixture in the ceiling of our hut if I don't use this ladder I made by casting my own aluminum.
That's a sharp-looking ladder.
Thanks. It's a design based on a ladder I saw in a dream, except without the angels on it.
I'm very impressed with how the place turned out. You're pretty skilled.
Thanks. Some of it are lies, though.
What do you mean? The proof of the pudding is in the tasting, and your work speaks for itself.
My carpentry is like tasty pudding. Thank you. What I mean is, since we're imagining this, I'm embellishing my skills a bit. I'm sure this isn't the way it really happened.
I don't follow you, Lou.
We are living in a memory, and memories are often wrong.
I don't know about you, but the memory of this moment is just now being made. I'm in the present.
I'm sorry to break it to you, but you're not. You're in a weird box that lets you live memories. We are living a memory, and that's why I'm doing things I can't normally do, because I misremember this.
Wow, that's some interesting stuff.
I'll show you. It's this box. It's called a dimvid. Open it, and it'll take you somewhere.
It's just a box.
Open it and see.
Hello and welcome to the Naked Gnome. Is this your first time dining with us?
Why, yes it is.
What?
And you?
Oh, he was speaking for both of us.
Shall I just address this gentleman here then?
I'm no gentleman, but sure.
No, you can talk to me too, please. As you wish. Welcome to the Naked Gnome. Like I was saying, we are a grotto concept located in the interior of Mystery Head Mountain. This is a natural limestone cavern with stalactites and stalagmites. The ones projecting down from the ceiling are stalactites. The way you can remember this is that they have to hold tight to stay on.
They have to hold on with all their might. Stalagmites, got it.
You don't, but I don't care. Anyway, we have a full menu of coconut items from our coconut bar, as well as apps and some hearty affair.
He said hearty.
I said heartier. Can I start you with one of our signature drinks?
What's that mean? We can just sign for it? Don't have to pay?
No, yins are gonna have to pay. Extra for being wise guys.
It looks great in here, Butchie. You did an amazing job.
All the credit goes to the design team and the staff, all of whom are me. Anyway, you want a coconut or not?
Yes, please. Lou?
Coconut, please.
Two coconuts. You'll have to remove the husks yourself, though. I got in late to work.
What just happened?
I ask myself that every moment of every day.
I mean, what happened after we opened your box?
The dimvid? Well, we went to a memory of first getting to the island, and then within that memory, you opened another dimvid, and that took us to a memory within a memory. That's never happened to me before, and so I don't know what to tell you. But we almost got lost in our memories.
So how does this work exactly?
The boxes take us to a relatively inconsequential memory of a moment in our lives and combines it with the memory of whoever's with us. So what we had was a composite experience based on the way we both remember it. Well, you should have called it the Rashomon machine. Gilligan's Island did an episode based on Rashomon, in which all the people on the island had a different recollection of their interaction with a Japanese soldier. Wow. I'm intrigued by this machine. You want to go somewhere else? You mean have an adventure as opposed to sitting here on the small uninhabited island thinking about stuff I can't have like pretzels? Yes. Then yes. Grandfather stood up out of his chair suddenly and without warning after we'd all been sitting in silence for at least an hour, frozen by a lack of motivation. Listless. Useless. Vague. He bolted up and marched to the hearth and cleared his throat, thrust his chin out, and recited Longfellow. Under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands, he recited from memory. He acted out the scenes, hammering his anvil like a blacksmith. He read Wreck of the Hesperus and made a great pantomime out of tying the young daughter to the mast in a storm. The skeleton in armor came alive right before us and rose up to tell its chilling tale. We sat rapt. His voice was like a symphony, his gestures a ballet. An explosion of expression and emotion was burning brightly before us. That was how he carved his initials on our souls. That's how our grandfather took up residence in our memory. Shall I open this box?
Run, Hardy!
Why? What's going on?
Recursive memory alert!
Run where? What?
Seems a bit bumpy today, doesn't it, Sam?
There are rough seas for sure. Probably should head for clear weather if we can.
You'll do nothing of the sort. We need to be at our destination on time, and I am one of the best sea captains of all time, and I will not be late.
But you've never been a sea captain before.
How hard can it be? We can't really bump into anything since the lanes are so wide. We're going at what seems to be a snail's pace, and the wheel barely steers the thing. So onward!
I'm just worried, sir, that with the hurricane...
Hurricane? This boat is made to withstand 10 hurricanes at once.
That's not an occurrence, but go on.
Besides, I brought along my young daughter to impress her. Where is she anyway?
Right here, Father. What the heck?
Oh, there you are, my princess. Daddy is driving his big wind boat now, so you run along and throw biscuits to the fishies.
Those biscuits are our only food, Captain.
Oh, you can have some of the wafers I usually have with my bouillabaisse.
Captain's wafers.
It really is getting quite blowy, isn't it? The waves.
It's a hurricane, I'm telling you.
A hurricane on this ship
will be killed.
Such talk from such a little girl.
Little girl? We're both the captain's daughter in the poem Wreck of the Hesperus. That's absurd. It's a meta memory.
The storm is raging now. I fear you shall be tossed overboard. I will tie you to one of the sheet poles.
The mast, Captain.
The mast. Help me tie it to the mast.
What are you doing? Don't tie us to the mast.
Let us go.
I read Wreck of the Hesperus.
It doesn't end well.
You'll be safe now. The greatest fear is of the unknown. And now that I know everything turns out fine, I'm unafraid.
You're unafraid, but... Captain, watch out!
Man, we're okay. We really dodged a bullet on that sinking ship.
Did we, though?
I think so.
See, maybe not.
This place does not look inviting. It looks like Butchie's Grotto Cafe, except without a cafe and with a dark, infinite sense of foreboding and vague danger.
The danger is never vague.
Hello?
You are scared of the unknown. The unknown holds dangers for which you cannot prepare, so you are scared.
Fair enough, yes.
But in the past, when you were happy, when you thought things would turn out fine, you were deluding yourself. The danger was still there. You just thought the unknown was known.
Question.
We were thinking of heading back to our present, our reality, and we were wondering...
You have two choices. Go back and be fearful in all the moments you thought were safe, or remain unafraid in the midst of the unknown.
Okay, did not get your name.
I am the unknown.
Nice to know you, unknown. He said the unknown. I imagine that matters.
Do you accept your situation?
How could we not? I think it's amazing how you made so many things out of scratch, Lou. It makes our life here on the island so much better. Everything is made from scratch when you think about it. Sure, a toaster is made in a factory, but why wouldn't you be able to make one from stuff in your backyard? You have made so many appliances, it's crazy. I found a bunch of aluminum and tungsten and other stuff in Mystery Head Mountain, and since I took shop in school, I'm still impressed. And coffee. Did you find coffee growing here? No, had to make my own. Make your own? From what? Let's just say from not coffee. The tasting of the pudding should be all the proof you need. Also, I made pudding. Cow's milk is not the only milk. I'll pass on the pudding. And the monkey's milk ice cream. I understand. Oh, my word. I'm just kidding. It's all made with coconut. The pudding, the ice cream, the coffee. The coffee? Yes, I toast bits of the shell and some dates from the date palm, and I can approximate coffee. For the newspaper, I use dried zabapa leaf and Drango ink. Oh, I haven't heard of those things. Those are just my name for them. Who knows what their actual name is? Your name is Genius from now on. Or rather, the professor. The professor? I like that. I've always wanted to be an intellectual.
That's too bad.
Hey, Butch, close up the cafe early?
Yeah, you guys were my last customers. I can't seem to drum up any business.
Probably the lack of people on the island.
I mean, I got other species in there, but they have a different economic system, and I can't one drink minimum them.
You're just in time to have some of my coconut cream pie. I don't do many things well, but one thing I can do is make coconut pie.
Nope.
What do you mean, nope?
Your coconut pie is terrible.
Thanks.
Which is funny, since it's the one thing that you think that you do well. Irony, man.
Lou's pie is good. I mean, he has limitations because we're all stranded on this island.
It's not good. It's not edible. There was probably something you'd do better. Like walking or breathing or something.
Do I not know myself?
You are on your way to knowing yourself with that question, but generally, no, you do not know yourself.
So all those times I thought I was happy because I could make a good pie, I was fooling myself.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, I'm not sad about it, but I could see how you might be. I still think Lou does a ton of stuff well.
That's not the point, Hardy. The point is, when I thought everything was good, it wasn't.
You should either go back in time and feel bad, or realize that you never know anything, really. So relax. Hey, is this a dim vid?
Don't touch it, Butch!
What are you watching, Butch? Someone made a best of reel of our old TV show, Our Stupid Island. This is where the unknown is lurking as we go about our business.
That's right. The unknown exploited our love of the dimvid box to make us lose ourselves in our memories.
So we fell even deeper into a completely falsely constructed past for fear of having to confront our situation on the island.
Yeah.
That was a deep show. Deep? Oh, come on, you're kidding me.
That sure is a neat box, Lou. Thank you. I'm glad you like it, even though you can't really keep your coconut fiber fabric socks in it.
More importantly, I can explore my memories.
Remember, this is accessing your memories for entertainment purposes only. It's not for important stuff like surgery.
I hear you.
If there's one good thing about being stranded on a desert island, it's being with friends.
Yeah, that never gets old.
Hi, Butch. Been off exploring?
I have. And I found a cave system that has clear water and a constant temperature, and it's like a resort, so I'm moving there, and you are not going with me. In fact, I'm establishing a separate nation.
Two nations on the same island?
That is done more often than not. So, if you want to come to my caves, you have to pay.
Pay in what?
I don't know. Some kind of coconut currency that I can use to buy goods from you, like your silence.
Sounds fair. We'll miss you, though.
Believe me, you won't. It's like I'm moving to the closet of our train compartment.
What?
I said I'm moving to the closet of this train compartment because I would rather have no air than spend another hour with you guys. Don't you ever shut up?
That's a trick question, because to answer it, I'd have to talk. For a while. In circles.
Just leave the door open a crack so you can get air.
If you want me, I'll be turning the closet into a sort of a lounge, so you can also get heavy apps. The Gruyere prosciutto mac and cheese is a whole meal, believe me. No discounts for friends. Bye.
See you, Butch. What are you reading, Hardy?
I'm kind of reading two books at once. One is about memory, and Robinson Crusoe.
He's primitive as can be. You know, his publicist was Edward Bernays, who invented modern PR.
No, that's Caruso.
What did you say?
Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, two different people.
Yeah.
Wow. What about Cher and Harry Cher?
So what are you reading?
Not two books at once. Remember when I read Treasure Island at the same time as that book on Albrecht Dürer?
Yeah, just don't get in a time machine afterwards.
Like, don't eat on a full stomach.
What? Why would you?
You'll drown.
If you swim?
Yep, while eating. Water gets in your mouth.
Oh my God, I can still hear you.
Just calm yourself. We're gonna read now.
It's the Unknown Show. Where not knowing what you don't know is the same as knowing what you don't know. And now, here's the unknown.
Hi, this is the unknown. It looks like I have my own show now. Stranger things have happened. One day, people are staring into a void, failing to see me. The next day, the unknown is, well known. Maybe that's going a bit too far. My producer, Chance, is going nuts over here. Okay, Chance, I'm still unknown. Ha ha. When I was offered this show, I thought about what I could do that might be of interest. What is it about the unknown that gets people going? Unfortunately, it's my very existence, and I ain't going anywhere, baby. But maybe if you realize that I was everywhere, that I'm your lifelong companion, things might be better. So I've decided to share with you my poetry.
Grandfather, we've been sitting around this fire in silence for a long time. I know we should be content with our own thoughts, but I'm running out of fresh information to think about.
Grandfather, are you all right?
What did you say to him?
Nothing.
Under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. The smith, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands. His hair is crisp and black and long. His face is like the tan. His brow is wet with honor's sweat. He earns whate'er he can and looks the whole world in the face, for he owes not any man.
Come hither, my little daughter, and do not tremble so, for I can weather the roughest gale that ever wind did blow.
He wrapped her warm in his seaman's coat against the stinging blast. He cut a rope from a broken spar and bound her to the mast.
Oh, father, I hear the church
then,
bells ring.
From those cavernous eyes, pale flashes seem to rise, as when the northern skies gleam in December, and like the waters flow under December's snow, came a dull voice of woe from the heart's chamber.
I was a Viking old.
The Jarl's grandfather used to do that, jump up like that, start reading poetry. Just grab a book of poetry like Longfellow or something and jump up and start reading it really dramatically in front of everybody on the hearth, right in front of the fireplace, like it's a little stage, gesticulating wildly. No, mine didn't either, but he let me do it, and that changed my life. He had a book of poetry, and he didn't say stop. I think it's very important to not always tell children, stop, stop, shut up, shut up, which is, you know, it's kind of your first inclination. But sometimes say, I'm going to let them express themselves over there in that field, in a tent. And they let the play be their education. Let them try different ways of living, pretend they're different kinds of, pretend they're on an island. The problem was that I would watch these TV shows, and then it was absolutely impossible to not just adopt those characters. And I believe that our forerunners, people who ran before us, did this based on books. Say, let's play Treasure Island. And the other children would say, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of seedy characters in there. I don't know if I want to be some kind of drunk murderer. I don't know. A lot of them are abusive and hard. The book makes it seem romantic, but I got to tell you, friend, it's not something you want to, I don't know if we want to play that. Let's play Exorcist. No, I don't know. That's a little too sophisticated. Let's go back to old-timey. This is, now I'm in the 70s. But we would, a lot of it based on a television show or something. Let's play, I remember Hogan's Heroes was popular because they had an underground thing up top where they were prisoners. Now this is, now think about this not literally, but from the perspective of a child. Above ground, you're a prisoner. You have no freedom. In fact, your life may be threatened, but there's always a possibility of a secret tunnel, a secret escape, some world underneath this one, some cave where you can hide, some safe place. So shows like that, or even an island, and sometimes on Gilligan's Island they'd go into a cave or something, and all the time that would happen, it would register with me. I'd say, I want to hide with you. I'm frightened, but I'm feel emboldened when I can have that little space cut out and I can just peep out a window at what's going on. And even though I can't control it and I know that this is crazy, just peeping out from my little safe space is enough, says the child me. Oh, I'm peeping out at you now. Oh, are you really? No, I'm not. I'm sorry. Are you sure? Because a lot of now the technology they say you can use to be used to spy on people. I'm not interested in spying on you, friend. I'm really not. I want you to come into my fort here because I've made a little imaginary space and I thought we could, I know we're adults and everything, but adults pretend all the time. They just involve, the way they get away with it so that they're not looking infantile is they try to involve as many millions of dollars in it as they possibly can. And then it looks like it's an endeavor. So this is not, we're not playing pretend. Oh, no, no. We are making a great film. Absolutely. A work of art. A work of art. Precisely. That's it. This isn't pretend. We are. We're simply. It's sort of investment. It is, isn't it? It's an investment. We are. We're investing in the imagination. People want to come and see our story and immerse themselves in it. And in return, we get money, which we can use for food or prostitutes or our homes of our own. Things like that. Yes, I agree with you. And it's all pretend, right? Yes, secretly we're playing pretend. But we say it's a corporation. That's right. We make a business out of it. Make a business of it. That's it, sir. I like the way you think. I like the way you think, I think. I like the way, I like that you think that I think you think. I know, sir. This is Maltese Falcon, right? It is, sir. We're pretending it's Maltese Falcon. I love to play, we would play Maltese Falcon with my friends all the time. We'd play like Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett and all. And the way we'd play is like one of us would pretend to have coffee and then somebody else would come and hit them over the head because they're always waking up from a concussion or something. Like, man, somebody slammed me over the head. Sometimes I had a friend who wanted to play Jim Thompson all the time. Say, let's play Killer Inside Me. Let's play Killer Inside Me. I don't want to play that book. That's weird. You go on and you do your thing. But I'm going to stay here with my friends, and we're going to play Pirate Ship, even though after I found out what pirates were, I thought, well, that's questionable. I probably oughtn't do that. Maybe I shouldn't play Pirate Ship. Maybe I should play something a little more. Like, what would be adventure? Who went around doing adventures without causing harm? No one. I think you're right. Yeah. Nobody, I guess. I read a lot of books about early explorers, so-called explorers. I think I know what they were looking for. They're not really going out of curiosity. A lot of money was involved and everything. They were going for reasons. They say, what and who can we exploit? There's probably, because a lot of people are onto us at home. So should we go out and explore the world? The world is so connected now and so much smaller now that everybody is able to exploit themselves, which is so much more convenient. You used to have to wait for a ship to come over the horizon to destroy you. Now you can do it yourself, basically. And that's great. It's wonderful to be able to have a community that is so diverse that you can even have everything you need, even your enemies. Say, well, I can do that for you. Your neighbor can do it for you. We used to have to outsource that to other countries. No. Now, oh my goodness. I love it, though. I love worlds where everybody has a little job to do, and we all have a little job to do, and I think the smaller the job, the more fun. Oh, I think that job is to go out and just have an experience and then say, I'm here to share with you what I saw, and then list all the things you saw, whether they're interesting or not. Don't think you have to make a story of it. There's not much for you to do, I guess. There's lots of ways to pass your time. There's lots of ways to feel temporarily safe and warm. You can bake bread. You can be what are all the professions? Baker. I think the person who makes the candles also does other stuff, so I'm going to come back to that. Tailor. Hang on now. Cooper. I'm trying to remember. There's professions. There's like 5 or 6 professions. Why am I not thinking of them? Cook. People make food. I don't know. Gosh. Food and clothes. Some kind of counselor. No, that's not one. I don't remember them all from my youth. Sometimes they're on buttons. Lawyer might be one. And we do need lawyers if we decide once and for all that we like law. We haven't fully committed to that yet. Once we do, though, we're going to need lawyers. Oh, I'm going to take a... I wasn't taking a sip of water. I used to not. It's only the last few years that I've had to sip. I don't know what happened. I think your mouth gets drier as you get old, because otherwise hard candies. My grandmother used to have Lifesavers in her purse, and I thought that was just a frivolous name or it was a reference to their shape. But I realize now that old people get the dry mouth like serious. I do, and I need the Lifesavers are life-saving. And so I need one. And my grandmother preferred the butterscotch, and they're not bad, to be honest. I like the butterscotch ones. I was never a big... Butterscotch has a bad name, and I think that's what's keeping it... People hear scotch, especially children, and they go, you know, I don't know that I want a whiskey. And, you know, it's not whiskey-flavored. It's more like... I don't know, it's more like butter with sugar in it, or I don't know, something like that. Well, that doesn't sound terrible. It isn't, that's what I'm saying. I don't know, maybe slightly burnt butter with sugar? I don't know, it's good though. I have to look up what it is. But I need those candies because I need my phlegm, and the phlegm is a sort of, you know, wheels are lubricated with oil. Legislation is lubricated with alcohol. And the spoken word is lubricated with spit, good old-fashioned spit. But sometimes spit needs a helper. Hi, I'm Hardy White for Synth Spit. And it's my fake spit I'm making up. It's all, it's nasty stuff, but it's all made from natural ingredients. It's basically just water, okra, phlegm, which we grow right here, and some other stuff that's added. I don't know, science stuff. Have some of that. It's just like having a slightly pasty mouth interior. Oh, I can't tell you how glad I'm here. I hope I'm not chasing you off with my strange talk. You say some odd things, Hardy White. I'm sorry, I'm sure I do. I'm sure I do. If I said things, though, that were familiar to you, would that be better? I'm sure it might be. You know, there are some folks that go out to hear music and they think, I hope that I hear all the songs I've already heard. And there are those who go out and say, I hope I hear songs that I have never heard. And then there's those in the middle who say, I hope they do some of the oldies, but then that there's new stuff, and there's an opening band. Very excited about that. Never heard of them. Very excited. That's probably the bait place to be, to look forward to the future, to cling to some things in the past, memory-wise, and to be present for both of them. Be present for the past or the future. They're only words, so you don't have to be. That's the great thing. And that's why I think why liars do so well and people do so well making up fake philosophies and worldviews and religions and everything, because they're just words and you can make them do whatever you want, really, because sometimes they don't even stand for anything. So they just stand for a feeling. So if your argument is self-contained, it doesn't even have to point anything out beyond itself. People go, that sounds about right. And oh, they're so ready to be clothed that they will wear anything, even if it's ill-fitting, as most clothing is that we purchased right off the rack. I'm not saying have your clothes bespoke, made. I'm just saying that we're used to things not fitting. Oh, I think we're a good fit. I think we're good friends. I'd be willing to take a test. To see one of those things that say, what do you have in common? For instance, let's say you take a quiz that says, what kind of music do you like? And I say, I like music I've never heard before. And you say, I like music I've never heard before. And that's amazing. We like the same exact type of music. Oh, when your mind is open, you're a universal recipient. When your mind is open, you can get any type of blood. When your mind is closed, I'll think of something later. Well, everything in it is safe at least. But when your mind is open, you're the universal donor. You're the universal recipient. Your thoughts are just like blood. Oh, our thoughts are like blood, aren't they?
Are they?
Aren't they? They're flowing between us. I'm giving you my blood, and you are giving me your blood, and we can sustain our life together by letting it flow through the veins of radio. Oh, they're going right through these cords and spurting out there into the universe, and we are being shattered with the radiant, wonderful blood of electromagnetic waves. Oh, I am thriving on it. And these times where it's so important to hear another human or to be with one, I wish we could reach out. Oh, the touch, the human touch. Let's remember it in our mind. At some point you were touched. Everybody was touched at least once. At some point, it's hard to get in this world without getting touched. Either somebody pulls you out or you're touching the whole way out, actually. And I guess you could remain untouched after that. But if you've ever been to, I don't know, what's the thing in New York where you to the High Line or something? People are going to touch you. And that's just because of proximity. But then there's being touched affectionately where somebody puts their hand in yours and you say, look at your hand. I'm not going to remark on it just because it's not remarkable. However, the feeling of touching another human being and connecting is marvelous.
All right, everybody. Come on, quick. Get into the tent. We'll be safe in here for a while.
Quick, close the door and lock it.
It's a tent.
I'm pretending it's a French farmhouse.
Oh, good call. So, gather around the fire, and I will tell a story.
A scary story, right?
Oh, yes, it's scary. It's a tale told by my grandfather.
Oh, those are good. My grandfather used to tell a tale about meeting Shecky Green at Calder Racetrack in Miami.
No, this is scarier. This is about a skeleton in armor. Wow, that's creepy.
How did it get in the armor?
It died in it.
Died in it? But skeletons are already dead.
No, the guy whose skeleton it was died in the armor.
Oh.
Go on, Don. The skeleton was dug up long after it died in battle. And then its eyes started to glow, and it rose up.
Dang!
And then it spoke. I was a Viking.
A Viking? They had armor?
Yeah, Viking armor.
Because I was picturing more of a 17th or 18th century suit of armor like in haunted houses.
Why do haunted houses have suits of armor in them?
Expecting trouble, I imagine. You hear a sound in the night, and you throw that armor on.
It takes a long time to put on, though.
Those houses are huge. You have the time. Then you sharpen your sword, then you go downstairs to the kitchen to have a look.
This wasn't an English knight. It was a Viking who died in battle.
In armor, which he is still in.
Yes. But without his flesh.
I bet it doesn't fit as well.
Maybe it fits better.
If my flesh fell off, I still couldn't get into those size 32s I wore in high school.
Let's let Don continue, please. I'm not sure I can, actually, because I don't remember the whole story. It's a poem by Longfellow.
Well, do you have any other stories?
Okay, well, there's this sea captain who didn't heed a warning about an oncoming hurricane, so he was forced to tie his little daughter to the mast when the storm hit. But he and all the crew were washed away, and the ship sank, and the girl was still tied to the mast. Oh, that's cheery. Thanks for that.
That's a poem?
Yes.
If I gave that to my Grammy on a greeting card, she'd cry.
Not all poetry is happy. Some is neutral, though. Like the one about the guy who ate pumpkin, Peter. That's a nursery rhyme. Which is a poem, Mr. Relief.
When we were little, we'd like to share our fears like that. It'd be helpful. If you're all together, you can think about or talk about a scary skeleton or something like that, and it's not so bad because the others are there too. If you were alone with a skeleton, like say, oh, we're going to go visit your skeleton aunt or something. I don't want to do that because she scares me because, you know. But it's shared things are always better, whether it's bad or good. Isn't that strange? Because you say, I don't want to share something good. If I want a cake, I want it all to myself. But you know, oh, if you're a certain type of person, you know that deep in your heart that it's shared joy that really elevates you. And shared pain, oh, shared pain can be a little bit better. It can blunt it a little bit. It will never erase it. But it can always make things a little bit better. We share our grief for that reason. Doesn't erase it, never erases our heart, our pain in our heart, but it can repair it a little bit. You know, it can prop you up. It can hold you up. You know, as you collapse, somebody's got your arm. It keeps your face from being in the mud. You might be a wreck, but you're still standing. Oh, that's all it takes. Just got to keep standing. That's all. You don't have to do anything else. Nothing else is required of you. And even then, that's not even required of you. If you can't keep going, you can't keep going. Oh, this is not an easy thing to do, and none of us come out of it looking very good, do we? So all we have is this little moment. All we have is our little tent safe for the moment. But this moment, we can make it drag on. I know, especially spoken word, if you really want a beautiful moment to last forever, make it some kind of immersive spoken thing. Because then say, oh, this is going on a bit. But see, when that ends, the time is going so fast, it gets away from you. It whirs by. It's like driving a really fast vehicle. It's just, oh, I feel like I'm out of control. But when it's slow, you say, I'm taking my time. I can look around. And maybe the race will pass me and they'll forget that I'm here. And I can just sneak off the race course for a while and live in that little farmhouse I've been keeping my eye on. I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm dropping out of the race. I'm going to go live in the farmhouse. Come with me. Close the door. It's just you and all my friends. I don't know how many of you there are because it's dark in this barn. Moo, moo, ba, blah, 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 blah. They're making all sorts of animal noises. I think I only made two legitimate ones. Something else is going on in this barn, isn't it? Oh, we'll never know. Maybe the unknown is here for us. Let's listen. Is the unknown here with us? Oh, unknown, who out in the universe cannot be perceived, but whose presence is sensed through our anxiety. I speak to you now and I say, rattle something off the shelf so I know that you're here.
I'm here.
Oh, okay, that's obvious. Don't be that obvious. Now I've lost respect for you, the unknown. Is anything unknown? Yes. Not everything is known. And it's hard to know. And we have a branch of science called know-it-allism, where people study knowledge itself. And it's either studied in philosophy or leisure science, one of them, the epistemology or something like that. I don't myself look into things too deeply because of the attention span problem and everything. If you lose momentum in school early, and then sometimes there's a lot of even books meant for laymen that are still a little too complicated for you. And that's okay. I'm fine with that. A lot of my underachievement in school, and I'm not trying to not take blame for it, but a lot of it was not my fault. I mean, situations happen too, right? We can't always do our best. We don't always know what our bests are because we have the circumstances that we're given. And then we just work with those. So maybe, I'm not an award-winning surgeon. Is that the thing? Right now, because I'm not capable of it, or just that's not the way my life went. And it could be a mixture of both. And if it is a mixture of both, there's nothing that bitters does not enhance. So take a little bit of bitters, one or two drops, and it'll just makes everything a cocktail. Even your uncertainty. Say, oh, I've got uncertainty and anxiety. Add a little bitters to it, and you can call it something. Like a cosmopolitan's taken, but there's nothing more cosmopolitan than that kind of mixture of anxiety and uncertainty. Oh, it's hard to live in these times. It's hard to live in the old times. It's hard to live in times before we had hands. But everything has a challenge, like fish when they're trying to type. If you are too early, then you will miss the worm. Dum, 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 dum. Yes, the fish got here too early to do any actual typing. And sometimes you will find, maybe in your artistic life, you are ahead of your time. If you're ahead of your... Oh, that'd be... Being ahead of your time. Is that good? Your time, though, has a lot of connotations. Sometimes you use people for your demise. It's, I guess it was your time. Or your success. It's your time. It's your time to shine. It's your time. It's always your time. Don't put it on me. I didn't invent time. It's not my time.
You walked by and then I saw it.
Yeah, like it dropped out of my pocket. You're not going to do that. You're not going to pin that on me. It's not my time. I didn't agree to this. It's just flying by me. I'm going to do whatever I can. You act like I made some kind of appointment to be here. I did not. I was thrust into this world, into this life. Time is strange to me, and so I can't cope with a lot of the things that I am shown and given, and I'm not going to pretend that they seem normal to me when they do not. Everything to me, most things seem to me unknown, and I fear the unknown, leaving me in a constant state of fear. It is only mitigated by the presence of others who I know share that fear, and by sharing our fear subsides a bit. And we look into one another's eyes and we realize that we are something that longs to be together, some stronger thing, something that fragmented is fearful and timid, something that together contains a different spirit. That's why everybody knows that. That's you get together in something and you feel elevated, whether you're mourning, whether you're sad or something. And something that prevents us from being together is very frustrating. And darn near tragic, because that's the one thing we have. But let me tell you a secret. I will tell you a secret that the human voice, in combination with radio waves, is like an octopus. It's like a cuttlefish, and you're keeping it in a container. But if there's a little bit of a crack in that container, if there's any space at all between the lid and the jar, if there's any space at all between the door and the floor, The cuttlefish, the octopus will find it and can make itself very small. And this human spirit, and many other human spirits on this radio station and others, are putting their voices out like that, like slimy octopi pusses. Slithering out a jar and onto the floor and out the door and back into the ocean, because they're going to find you. They're coming for you. The cuttlefishes of human longing, of the heart reaching out, of all that love. Here they come. Love heart octopuses. And Hardy White's, his is right out there, because he loves to plop his non-invertebrate body onto the floor. I got one. I must have a cuttlefish bone, like one bone or something, because people take it out and give it to their birds, which is sad. It's a smart little creature. Probably I'd rather give a bird bone to a cuttlefish. I wouldn't do that. But the length of your life doesn't always correlate to your intelligence. They're very intelligent beings, and they only last a couple years. But a bird can go on and on, being a dumbass for like 80, 90 years or something. So, oh, it's smart. Oh, yeah, it screams and it pulls out all its hair or something. That doesn't seem, poor thing. Oh, no, I love birds. I love all creatures. We all do that, though. We are all neurotic parrots, aren't we? Screaming and pulling, because we don't know what we need. And we know we don't need a cage. We don't know how we got here. Pretty sure we didn't volunteer. But now that we are here, I'm glad that we're together. And I'm glad that you found Hardy White. I didn't find you, found me. Okay. And I'd like you to return me. I will return you now safely. You are in control of your... I'll do it. That was the Outer Limits would say. You're in control of the horizontal. You're in control of the vertical. But you're not anymore on your TV. Isn't that tragic? You can't. You know, I can't control the horizontal and vertical. What are you even talking about? Don't worry about it. But your radio, I can do that. You control the bass.
You control the treble.
You control the knob. You don't know what it does, but it says enhance or something. Brighten. You control the, I don't know, sparkle. But now I do. But at the end of this hour, you will control it again, and then you'll give it to Kevin, and then he'll play you something to move your heart. It'll move your heart for you. He'll tell you where he's moving it. That's the thing. He's not that kind of guy. He'll take it, and I'm just going to move it over here where it's going to jump up and down and be joyous. It's going to put its hands in the air. It's going to recognize its place in the universe. It's going to submit itself to the unknown. Oh, all that in some music? Oh, yes, and much more. You've got to keep listening. You've got to keep connected. Oh, my friends whose hearts are failing them, whose strength is failing them, whose emotions are failing them. Hang on there, hang in there. Touch my hand, touch my virtual hand. Grab it. Keep a good hold on it. Keep listening. Keep listening and being in touch. Oh, never let go. As long as we're here together in the tent telling stories, that's all we can ask for, is a little bit of respite, a little bit of temporary safety in each other's company. And I love having it with you. Oh, my friends, sometimes I clap my hands. Am I trying to look like an idiot? Maybe a little bit, because I see there's some people out there that are just too, I think, seeing somebody that is more foolish than they could possibly be, then they feel like maybe being themselves or open up their heart or maybe being honest with themselves, they will not seem as foolish. Or maybe being expressive of their love, they won't seem as foolish as they thought, because there's always me. There's always Hardy White to be more foolish. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City and Rockland County, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
I was standing. I was standing at the crossroads, and I thought. Oh,
Mighty Blythairs. I think that's how you pronounce it. Blythairs. And a wonderful arrangement of This Little Light of Mine on the Dove Song record label. You Can't Hurry God. Joe and Thomas. Sunday Records recording artists. Joe and Thomas. You Can't Hurry God and This Little Light of Mine. Appropriate tunes for this evening to begin our program here on Sinner's Crossroads Gospel Broadcast on WFMU. My name is Kevin Nutt. Thanks to each and every one of you for tuning in. We've got some more gospel requests for you this evening. Very excited about this. And we'll get right to it. The Great Fairfield Four, Alan Toronto of the message board, has requested this tune. And Alan of Toronto, I could not find the Fairfield Four song that you requested, so I'm playing this one. My apologies. Don't Let Nobody Turn You Around. It's what they'll be singing. By request, the Fairfield Four, here on Sinner's Crossroads, on WFMU.
Don't you let nobody turn you around, don't you let nobody turn you around, don't you let nobody turn you around, just keep on, just